Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. After graduating flight school in 1967, Clark Mola was assigned to the 17th Assault Helicopter Company. In 1968, while flying combat missions in Vietnam, Mola was aircraft commander of a helicopter in a flight of five helicopters. He is with me now in the studios in Vermilion to talk more about his Vietnam story. Clark Mola, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
And you can see video of Clark telling his story on sdpb.org/Vietnam. We're happy to have you here. And let's just start out with, did you plan to be a helicopter pilot? What were you doing before you joined the service and how you transitioned into that?
A good question. Glad you asked that. Well, I was actually going to school here in Vermilion in 1965. And there was five of us guys living in a house on Clark Street here. And one of the guys living in the house that we had there was interested in flying. So he approached me several times and talked about Warrant Officer Candidate School, which was a program the Army has. They still have it, for that matter. And it's a program for qualified people to see if they can get accepted in a helicopter training or fixed wing, either fixed wing or rotary wing. Most generally, it's rotary wing because the Army is made up primarily of rotary wing. Probably 98% or 99% of the aircraft in the Army are rotary wing. There's that 1% of fixed wing, so very few fixed wing pilots. But at any rate, he approached me several times, and I told him I have no interest in flying. At that time, I hadn't flown before and just didn't have any interest. Well, this went on for 6 months or so, and at the end of the semester, the winter semester, I was broke, didn't have any money, and I was trying to decide, well, what am I going to do? You know, get another loan to go back to school, or just what should I do? So I thought, well, maybe his name's Archie Vavra, by the way. If you're listening, Archie, thanks a lot for you know, getting me in the right direction here, pointing me toward flight school. I really appreciate it, Archie. But at any rate, so he and I went down and took our exams and one thing another and qualified. And first thing you know, I was basic training first. I had to go. Most all the candidates have to go to basic training unless they're prior service. You can get into rotary wing school if you're prior service. Obviously, you've had, you know, 2, 3, 4 years of prior service, and then you go right from your job assignment to flight school. In my case, being as I was fresh off the street here, I went to basic at Fort Polk, Louisiana. And from Fort Polk, I had a flight assignment to flight school. In those days, it was at the primary phase was at Fort Walters, Texas. This was in 1966. So I reported for duty there at Fort Walters, Texas. I can still remember 10 July 1966. It was hot.
It was hot.
And miserable.
You said Archie.
And I said, Archie, what am I doing here? But in those days we had the old wooden two-story Army barracks buildings, you know, that they had from the rhetorics from World War II. And we had the fire drill, and it was interesting. And the first 6 weeks of flight school was actually more like basic training all over again, because what we did was a lot of physical training, a lot of 4 and 5 mile runs up this real steep hill, one of the hills they had right around Fort Walters there, and a lot of PT. And then when we weren't involved in PT, we were in classes. We had it was all class assignments and PT the first 6 weeks. And basically what they tried to do there is just wash the weak candidates out, if you want to put it that way. The guys that couldn't handle the long runs and the heat, and there was a lot of harassment. We had several TAC officers, and they were always screaming in your ear, you know. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like a OCS type environment.
And you need this.
How's that?
You need this. You're going to need this training later on. Did you have an awareness at that time that they were building something in you that you would tap into?
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
I did. They washed a lot of the candidates out just during that phase. This is just the first 6 weeks of training, because they was constantly screaming in your ear and harassing you, so to speak. It didn't bother me at all.
Right.
No, it didn't
How come?
Bother me. Well, I grew up, kind of a tough love kind of a situation. I wasn't pampered when I was a kid. And so this was nothing new for me. I mean, as far as the screaming in your ear, that was new. But as far as the, being with a rough bunch of guys, so to speak, and they were rough and tough, even though they were officers, they were demanding and strict. Mm-hmm. And I just fell right into that gang, so to speak.
And it made
didn't
sense
bother
to
me
you.
A bit.
You said in your video from that you can see on sdpb.org Vietnam that even war in some ways made a certain sense to you. Not that war makes sense, but you fit into the structure of it. It didn't it didn't unravel you.
Not at all.
In a way, the character that you had.
No.
In the interest of time, I want to jump ahead to, and if you're just joining us, my guest is Clark Mola, and jump ahead to being in Vietnam, and as a helicopter pilot, a lot of what you do is bringing troops in and out of landing zones. Do you have a relationship with those troops? You certainly see them in some of their worst, and they're awfully happy to see you,
mm-hmm,
I'm
mm-hmm.
guessing.
Do
you form a
yeah.
relationship with them, or is there a distance that really needed to be maintained so that you could do your job safely?
Another good question. In those days, we were doing a lot of, 90% of the time, we were doing what I call insertions and extractions. We were inserting troops into landing zones and extracting them out of the field, back to the rear. And so, none of the pilots, for that matter, our crew members, had a chance to really get close to any of the infantry troops. And the reason for that is because, you pick them up in a pickup area, a pickup site, which is secure, and you come in there, normally we're flights of five, and there may be several flights of five. Some of the lifts I was involved in, there might have been 25 aircraft. And you always work in, we always worked in flights of five, so there might be, in that example, five flights of five, or there might just be one flight of five, any of those numbers. At any rate, you come in there. You don't shut down. You land, and the troops are all of the troops are on either side of the aircraft. Typically, that's the way it works, and they enter the aircraft from both sides, and so it's done very expeditiously, very quickly. You don't waste a lot of time. You got 2 hours and 20 minutes fuel. And then you better be looking for another spot to refuel, so you don't have a lot of time to,
right.
mess around. But at any rate, then you're off to the insertion, to the landing zone where you're going to put the troops in. And most generally, you don't land. They call it a landing zone, but you don't land. You come in there, and as the aircraft comes to a hover, not a still hover, but as you're coming down and in some sort of a deceleration, and you're probably still moving, slightly moving, the troops are off the aircraft, and then you're off again. Mm-hmm. So that's the way it was. Very rarely did you have time to talk to the troops and really get to know them. Now, in those situations where you were afforded that privilege of being able to have 10, 15 minutes on the ground and talk to the troops for some reason or another. It was rather interesting because most of these guys said that they would rather not be in the air. They would invariably say, we're sure glad you're flying these aircraft and not us. And we thought just the opposite.
Right.
We thought to ourselves, I know where I'm going to be tonight. If I make it through the day, if I make it through the day here, I know where I'm going to be tonight. I'm going to be in my bunk in, Camp Eagle, for example, up north in I-Corps, where I spent a lot of time with the 101st. But I knew I was going back there, and if the mess hall was shut down, if we got in late, I was going to have C rations and or, you know, MRIs or whatever. So that's the way it was. I just felt a lot more comfortable flying in the air, knowing where I was going to be that night, rather than being out in the bush, you know.
Right. But it doesn't always go as you expect. So we only have a couple minutes left, but I think we should close with you take a lot of fire, and at one point you get shot down. So it doesn't always happen like you think. What are those experiences like for you these years later to look at the time that you were shot down, the time that you took fire, the time that you know, folks came into the helicopter badly injured or deceased? How do you sort of process those things now?
Well, I just feel very fortunate that I'm still sitting here being able to talk to you, basically. You know, just one example, and I could talk to you all day about missions and experiences. I mean, we could go on here all day on this, but I'll just give you one example. We got shot down one day right on the South China Sea, and I knew exactly where I was. I was on 090 degree radial out of Fubai, straight east of Fubai. And we went down right on the coast. And as soon as we got down, of course, I was able to land the aircraft safely. When I say shot down, it wasn't like I didn't have power to the engine. I still had power to the engine. What happened is we're going along, and I could hear the aircraft taking hits. I could hear us taking hits, you know, this rap, rap, rap. It's just like a seat belt that's unhooked in your car. And you can hear that thud, thud, thud. At any rate, the engine oil temperature went sky high, clear out of the red, and the transmission oil pressure went to zero. We ended up on the beach. I put the gunners out on these huge sand dunes. The North Vietnamese and Viet Cong were coming up. Well, probably North Vietnamese. They were coming up the beach. And we had a really close call. Come to find out, there was a regiment. They discovered an NVA regiment in there. We got pulled out of there with a recovery aircraft, and it was a pretty eventful day.
We are going to, unfortunately, everybody's in their car and not wanting to turn away. I could hear this story all day, but we're out of time. Clark Mola, thank you so much. Come back and tell us more again soon.
I'd love to, yeah.